Cosmic Shed.
Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Shed. It's just me, Andrew, in the shed today, but we do have a very special guest for you. Marina Sirtis played Diana Troy in Star Trek The Next Generation.
You're on board the USS Enterprise, a Federation starship.
Are you the keeper of this jail?
I'm Diana Troy, ship's counselor.
Counselor? Too bad. I'd rather you were the jailer to keep me company during my return trip.
And Marina herself is returning to the stage this summer in the West End for a new play called The Dark Sublime. And it does have a science fiction angle to the play. So we're delighted to say that Marina joins us for this episode. And Ty and I, last night, just before Tottenham took on Spurs in the Carabao Cup semi-final, had the chance to have a chat with Marina Sirtis. And we began by asking her about the play, The Dark Sublime.
I was looking for a play to do, because I haven't done a play in about, over 20 years. And I wanted to do a play in London. And I met Andrew Keats, funnily enough, at a Star Trek convention in Birmingham last year. And we got talking, and we started looking for things to do together. And then Mark Gatiss gave him this play to read, and he sent it to me, and I fell in love with it, and it all kind of snowballed after that. He sent it to Trust Studios, and they loved it and wanted to do it, and Andrew's going to direct it, and it's about an aging sci-fi actress, so won't have to do any research. And there's an LGBTQT thing in it as well. There's an element, you know, that's quite an important part of it. And there's a friendship between my character Marianne and her best friend Kate, which is actually very similar to my relationship with my best friend. And so it kind of ticked all the boxes for me. And the most exciting thing for me is that at my ripe old age, I'll be making my West End debut.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff.
I know. I'm excited and terrified at the same time.
Yeah. When does it all kick off, though?
Well, it opens on June the 24th and it runs through August the 3rd. Yeah. And obviously, we'll be rehearsing a few weeks before that.
Yeah.
Not too far away now.
Because there isn't, as far as I know, the cast at the moment is just you. Is that right?
Yeah, it's just me. I think basically because I was attached to it, it helped, you know, that having me attached to something about sci-fi, obviously it's a bit of a no-brainer.
Yeah, it certainly got our attention.
But it's not a sci-fi play; it's a play about relationships.
Yeah,
that just happens to have a sci-fi theme.
Yeah. And is it, when you say it's a similar relation to the one that you've got with your friend?
Well, I'm a bit outrageous and a bit I kind of think before I speak before I think a lot of the time, and uh-huh. I get myself into scrapes, and I sometimes upset people without really meaning to, but you know, it's like opening my big mouth and putting my size 10s in.
Yeah.
And my best friend is the one in real life who's always kind of saying, you really don't want to do that, or you really don't want to say that, and did you really mean to do that, and kind of pulling me back and keeping me out of trouble, and, you know, chastises me occasionally. But, so there's a bit of that in there as well. I mean, there's quite a lot of that in there, actually. So it's, I mean, that was the other thing. The character was so much like me. It was just serendipitous, really, that this play has never even been published, so it literally is brand new. And I think it was just meant to be. I mean, I'm looking to come back to England at some point in the not-too-distant future and leave America.
Okay.
And so this seems like a perfect springboard for it.
Yeah. What's driving you away from America?
A apart from Donald Trump, you mean?
That's exactly what I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Well, pretty much Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Well, America's changed in the last couple of years. I mean, there's always been this kind of undercurrent of racism and misogyny and homophobia and, you know, all those things. But people didn't have the gumption to speak out. And so it was kind of, you could kind of ignore it. I mean, you knew that those people were out there, but they were a silent minority. But now with Trump, he's pretty much given them all permission to speak. And this vileness has kind of erupted. And then there's the gun thing. You know, you're not even safe in your own church or synagogue anymore. Not safe in the supermarket. You're not safe in school. It's not really a country that I want to be in anymore.
You're obviously not afraid to kind of speak your mind on Twitter. Obviously, we follow you on Twitter. And
oh, well, thank you very much.
I love how salty you get with certain politicians. Have you found kind of the more misogynistic replies surprising? Because obviously you would have thought, as a prominent actress from Star Trek, your followers would mainly be liberal sci-fi fans.
No, but they're not. I'm amazed that Republicans follow me, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because everyone knows my politics. I'm not quiet about it. You know, I just, the thing that amazes me the most is that whole, you're just an actress, just shut up and act, you know, and we don't want your opinion. But if I was a plumber or worked in Marks and Sparks, would I be allowed to have an opinion then? I mean, it just seems bizarre to me that people in show business are not allowed to have an opinion. I think what they're actually saying is shut up because you have a voice that a lot of people listen to, so don't speak.
Mm.
I mean, that's what the bottom line is. I mean, it's like when the Dixie Chicks came out against George Bush and they went into the streets and burnt their CDs, you know, because they dared to speak out against George Bush. There is this element in America that is very, very, kind of, just not accepting of anything that doesn't, you know, that doesn't agree with them. And I actually don't get upset at the stuff on Twitter. I've got skin like a rhinoceros, and it really is. I'm mixing my metaphors here madly, but it's all water off a duck's back. It really is. I really don't get upset with it. And actually, I talk about this at conventions when I'm up on stage.
Yeah.
And just say, look, to the kids, you know, kids who are killing themselves because they're being cyberbullied, you know, I say, look, the people that you love you back.
Yeah.
And the rest is just noise. Yeah. You know, it's just noise, and you can tune it out, and that's what the block button's for, and that's what the mute button's for, and that's what the delete button's for. So I use those three things often. You know, I mute a lot of people on Twitter. I really do. I don't want to give them the satisfaction of blocking them and then saying, oh, I've been blocked by Marina Sirtis, you know, and wearing it as a badge of honour. So I just mute them.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a funny thing, isn't it? I mean, what I want to say back to those people when they say you don't have a voice because you shouldn't have a voice because you're an actor is the president is a reality TV star.
A reality star, exactly. He's a reality star and he's allowed to spout his vileness, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't seem to make the connection that they voted for a bad businessman who was a reality star, because you don't go bankrupt six times if you're a good businessman.
No.
You know, he inherited all his money. He didn't make his money and he's managed to lose it six times. So, I basically think he's a crook. I think, you know, I have my own opinions of what he's been doing, but I think he's a crook and I think he's a really bad person.
Yeah.
It's strange that the realm of sci-fi has suddenly become like a battleground for this new wave of misogyny, because as I'm sure you know, a lot of the Star Wars films have faced abuse for female characters and ethnic characters.
Yeah.
Doctor Who and also Star Trek with Sonequa Martin-Green and Michelle Yeoh and gay characters. Do you feel that this is something new, or did you kind of face the same thing when Star Trek The Next Generation took off, people saying this isn't Star Trek? Or do you feel that there is a real racist, misogynistic tinge today that there wasn't there back in the 80s?
Well, I didn't feel a misogynistic twinge. I mean, I didn't feel it from the fans. I mean, I always, when I think back of the history of Star Trek, I always think it's quite groundbreaking because, you know, first of all, Nichelle Nichols was the first black woman, you know, to have a prominent part in a TV series back in the 60s. Then when TNG came along, there were two very important female members, well, three originally, important female members of the crew. Unfortunately, because Denise Crosby left and, you know, she was kind of a woman in a man's job as security chief, the two of us that were left were in the caring professions, you know, so, you know, that was an issue, I suppose. But then, you know, by the time Voyager came along, we had a female captain. I think Kate was embraced. I think that the misogyny is growing because women are getting more powerful and speaking out, and men who can't deal with that are feeling threatened. So I actually think it's going to get worse before it gets better, because I think the more power women get, the more anti-female feeling is going to come out. I mean, in technology, this has existed since day one.
Yeah.
You know, in video games, you know, on online content, it's always been men. And then as soon as a woman comes in, she gets it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it there is a tie in there, I think, between the sci-fi and the technology, because it's usually technological, you know, those kinds of people who watch sci-fi.
Yeah.
So it seems to be a tie-in, but, you know, they just got to get over it because we're not going backwards.
I think I was most surprised about it when Discovery was first announced, and the amount of grief that Sonequa Martin-Green got, and also the series as a whole for featuring a gay couple. And there was an argument that Star Trek had suddenly become liberal and progressive by so-called Star Trek fans.
Yeah, well, you know
Trek
what?
Fans.
They obviously don't get it then, do they? But, see, I don't know how they can call themselves Trekkers or Trekkies or Star Trek fans.
Yeah.
Because if that is their way of thinking, they just didn't get it from the get-go. Because Gene was a real progressive, you know? And, yes, okay, he was a man who kind of peaked, who lived through civil rights movement, he lived through the women's liberation movement, but he, you know, I'll be honest, there were times when he was a little bit, kind of non-PC.
Yeah.
He would be regarded as non-PC today, but, you know, he was a product of his time. But the whole thing about Star Trek is the opposite of what these people are saying.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, isn't it? I noticed that you were saying that you hadn't seen Discovery when you were in America for obvious reasons, and you were going to watch it when you got back to the UK. Have you managed to watch it yet?
I have, and I think it's really, really good.
Great, yeah. No,
I really do like it. You know, listen, Jason Isaacs is a mate, so I had to watch, you know. I had to watch, despite him being a Liverpool fan, I had to watch it. But I think it's really good, and it's Star Trek. You see, I thought with DS9 a little bit, it wasn't Star Trek because it was like a hotel in space. And Gene always said that Star Trek should be about, you know, exploration and not about, you know, I think he actually nixed it when they proposed it to him.
Yeah.
But then once he passed away, they made it anyway. So. But I think, you know, all the other Star Treks are what he had in mind. And I think you have to, you know, to respect his memory and respect what he envisioned. I'm a big fan of Gene's. I loved him as a person. And I always wanted Star Trek to be true to his vision.
I think it's brilliant the way they've done that. I don't know if you know, was there any kind of thinking when they were putting Discovery together, you know, knowing Jonathan Frakes and things, that were they thinking, okay, now we need to take Star Trek back to what it was because of the political atmosphere that we've got at the moment?
No, I don't think so. I think, to be honest, that that's going to be Patrick's show. I think Patrick's show is going to be more about, more representative, if you like, of the political times that we're in.
Cool.
From what I gather from Patrick, and I probably am letting the cat out of the bag and getting into a lot of trouble. But, yeah, I think that that was one of the reasons he was interested in doing it.
We've been told that part of the play deals a lot with fan interactions. As someone who's been...
One fan interaction.
Can you tell us any more about that at all?
Well, you know, actually it was really funny because when William Shatner tweeted about Dark Sublime, he said, it's about a friendship with a fan. Oh, it really is sci-fi. Well, that's his experience. He obviously doesn't have any friendships with fans. I, on the other hand, do have friendship. I have developed a lot of good friends with fans. And so for me, it isn't such an anomaly. It basically, someone shows up on her doorstep and it kind of goes from there.
Cool. And is it just the two of you then? You
no,
and
no.
Your...
I think there are five people in the cast.
Oh, okay.
Four or five people in the cast, yeah.
And has anyone else been cast yet?
No. Oh, I'm okay. Waiting to hear who going to be acting with. That's not down to me. I'm just the hired actress. It's up to Andrew and the other producers who they're going to cast in the other parts.
I mean, you said about Mark Gatiss at the start. I didn't know he had anything to do with it. What's his role? Is he?
He said, I don't know how he knew. I don't know if he knew Michael Dennis, the writer,
right,
or whether the play fell in his lap.
Yeah.
But Andrew Keats had kind of put feelers out to people saying, you know, we're looking for something for Marina, and Mark Gatiss sent him the play.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, that's you've got you and Mark Gatiss. That's enough of a seal of approval for us, basically.
Not bad, eh? Not bad.
Yeah, brilliant.
Like you said, with the new political climate, lots of people are coming to Next Generation as a kind of salve against the relentless horror that's going on in the world.
That's true.
The series has recently been remastered and is all in HD. Well, it was only because of that that I noticed for the first time that you wore black contact lenses throughout the series.
Right.
Something that I never noticed on my horrible old TV growing up. Is this?
I know, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah. Everyone thought I had black eyes, and of course I didn't. So that's become clearer.
Yeah, have there any other revelations come through since the series was upgraded like that that have fans have noticed?
Well, I remember CBS actually invited me and LeVar Burton to go and see the remastered version a few years ago. And the thing that really struck me, because they'd only just been working on Encounter at Farpoint, the very first episode, and the creature up in the sky that had the tentacles hanging down, when I saw it in HD, I saw that it wasn't just tentacles. There were like these tiny little feathery things on them.
Uh-huh.
And I went, oh, blimey, this is going to be amazing. I mean, I'm glad it's HD of my face 30 years ago and not my face today.
Also, I recently wrote a book for which I interviewed Ronnie Cox, and he took full responsibility for putting you back into a Starfleet uniform.
His character did, but it was actually the writers that did it. So, he's, you know,
brilliant.
Let's be honest about this. Yeah, he did. It was good because I actually had been dying to get into a uniform since the get-go, and I was really happy that I was finally in uniform.
Yeah. You're not planning to step back into it, are you?
Oh, no. What, my spacesuit?
Yeah.
oh, good Lord, oh, blimey, I'd have to go to a fat farm and get that skinny again. I'd have to lose about a stone and a half to get back into the one that they'd have to make me a new one. Yeah, I don't know if I would ever be that skinny again. If I did get that skinny, I'd look like death warmed up, so I don't know if it would be a good idea.
I'm sure you can't tell us anything you know about the upcoming Picard series.
Actually, no, that's all I've said is all I know, so... it's all very hush-hush and it's all very secretive. The only other thing I know is that Patrick is one of the producers on it as well. So, you know, he's got a hand in the actual creation of it this time. But that literally is all I know. I mean, the actors really are the last people, you know. Yeah. I mean, you know, no one tells us anything.
I mean...
I know everyone's chomping at the bit. I know that they start shooting in March.
Oh, cool.
And that's all. And that they're going to shoot in Los Angeles, and that's all that I know.
I mean, obviously you appeared in Voyager and Enterprise, but obviously the last time we saw you and Commander Riker together was Star Trek Nemesis. In your mind, do you have any idea where those characters might be, you know?
Do you know what? Someone asked me this on Twitter, and I was like, I have not given it a moment's thought. They were characters. It's not me. You know, I don't actually sit and... think about things like that. I mean, Jonathan and I used to have this joke that we should make Star Trek the comedy, the half-hour sitcom, and call it the Rikers in Space. And, you know, that Uncle Data would come with visit and we'd have a little dog, Worf. But, I mean, I think people were taking that seriously. That's a dumb difference between Americans and English people. Is they don't get they don't get irony a lot of the time. Yeah. But, that was just a joke. And no, I have no clue and have never given it a minute's thought. You know, it's been, what, when did Nemesis come out?
2002.
So it's been, you know, nearly 17 years. It was done and dusted back then. So, I don't think I'd want to do anything about it. I think it would be a disservice to the new project, actually.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Well, we're very much looking forward to The Dark Sublime.
Yeah, we've got our tickets.
Yeah, we're there on the first.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Wouldn't miss it. We're there on the first.
Well, I hope you enjoy it. I hope I remember all my lines.
Yeah. And, maybe we'll catch up with you and some of the cast when we're there, and we'll do a podcast about it once we've seen it as well. That'd be great.
Okay, darling. All right. Brilliant. That'll work.
Yeah, thanks so much.
All right, if I don't hear from you, then I know you hated it.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's going to happen.
Thank you so much to Marina Sirtis for talking to us, and we will definitely be bringing you another episode on The Dark Sublime after we go and see it. We're actually seeing it very early in the run on the first Saturday, so we'll try and turn that round quickly and get the podcast out soon afterwards. Maybe talking with some of the other members of the cast, whoever they turn out to be. I'd like to talk to the writer as well, Michael Dennis. But if you want to get tickets to the play, we'll post a link to where you can get them from on the Cosmic Shed website, thecosmicshed.com. Of course, you could simply Google The Dark Sublime and Marina Sirtis, and I'm sure that'll find it. But if you can't get there, there's also an Indiegogo campaign being put together by the guys making the play to help them to develop the play to the best that it could possibly be. There's all sorts of rewards for that, as always with Indiegogo campaigns, and I'll post a link to that as well on the Cosmic Shed website. Thanks again for joining us for this episode, and we're going to be doing another one soon on Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I've not seen it yet, but apparently there's some science in it. Oh, and we're just days away now from Season 2 of Star Trek Discovery. Too excited. Thank you very much for listening.
The Cosmic Shed.
Science fact.
Science fiction.
And everything in between.